want to turn to 1 Timothy chapter 2. Those very famous words, verse 5, "For there is one God and one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus." And you're listening tonight to a Protestant preacher. I'm standing in a Protestant pulpit, and I'm going to address myself to a subject that now has become the concern of not only the Protestants, but of every American. It was announced very suddenly, just a short time ago, that Pope Paul from the Vatican would come to the United Nations to deliver an address on peace. And then it was announced that he would hold a mass in possibly Yankee Stadium for the faithful in the Roman Catholic Church. Immediately following this, Bishop Corson of the Methodist Church, and well known in this immediate area because this is where he ministers to the Methodists, issued a statement in Rome that he thought that a religious summit conference should be called in New York while the Pope was there, and that all the leaders of the different Protestant churches should gather to meet the Pope and that they should have a conference there. He indicated that this would be a great step of unity and also that it would help advance the cause of the ecumenical movement. So important did the news publications in our area that the Philadelphia Inquirer, in its edition here of Wednesday morning, September 15th, gave two column headlines on the front page on the upper left-hand corner, which is the most important part of any paper. And it outlined the statement made by Bishop Corson in Rome. And the story indicates for us that this idea had been considered first by the Vatican in its Council on Christian Unity, but that it had not been pursued. But now that the Methodist bishop had proposed it, the Pope would consider it, and we have now had the announcement that the Pope will extend his visit in order that he may attend this summit meeting with the Protestants of the United States. And also the papers yesterday announced now that President Johnson will meet the Pope in New York. Now, I've announced that I was going to speak on the significance of this, and there are two angles. First, the significance of the Pope's appearance before the United Nations, and second, the significance of the forthcoming religious summit meeting. That these meetings will be given the widest possible publicity in this country, there can be no possible doubt. But that there will ever be any words permitted to be printed or spoken in questioning this procedure or raising questions, I doubt whether you'll see anything in the newspapers about it. But I'm sure that there will be hundreds, and I say hundreds, of Protestant pulpits over this country in the next 3 or 4 weeks that will preach on this subject. There are going to be hundreds of Baptist churches rise up now and speak upon the subject. And even some of Bishop Corson's own Methodists are going to be speaking about this matter. In fact, I have already heard from some. Now, in regard to the significance of his coming to the United Nations, I perhaps should speak to you about the significance of his even coming to the New World. And I can bring that in possibly toward the end. But I must confess to you that I received a great shock personally when I read the story that he was coming to the United Nations for this message. My own reaction was, how could any religious leader, Pope or anybody else, go before the United Nations with the communist in it? With the communist having such a dominant place of control and power in the United Nations, it is no place for any religious leader. The United Nations has suffered a tremendous defeat at the hands of the communists, not just the United States, but the United Nations in the last months, when the communists defied the UN in this matter of the payment of its dues as required by the Constitution or by the Charter. The United States made an issue of it and said that Russia couldn't vote until she paid. And so we saw this miserable spectacle during the last session of their going out into the quarters and having agreements and coming together and not having any votes, but going on with their business. The whole thing was an utter farce. And it was caused because of Russia and the communists. And now, since the communists have the veto in the Security Council, and since an overwhelming number of these new nations from Africa and Asia have come in who are sympathetic to the Russians, no vote could be gotten either in the Security Council or the General Assembly that would uphold the Charter of the United Nations. And the United States backed out as gracefully as we could and retreated and surrendered to the Russians. That has just taken place in the United Nations. And this is a great communist victory in the UN. It is a communist victory in the UN. And for the Pope or any other religious leader to move in and to step onto that platform at the present time is really a great surprise to me. But I must go one step further, and I'm sure many good Roman Catholics are going to agree with me in this matter, and I'm sure many of them are agreeing with me right now when I get up and tell you this. Any organization that can be run or directly influenced by the communist is no place for freedom-loving people. We ought to get out of it. We ought to reorganize the situation in the world where we don't have to give the communist advantage and play up to the communist demands. But you will remember, and I take you now to the more basic consideration. You will remember when the United Nations was organized some 20 years ago in San Francisco, in deference to the atheistic communists, no prayer was offered anywhere in that assembly. In deference to the presence of those who repudiated God, the United Nations was organized on an atheistic basis. And it is, so far as its charter is concerned, and so far as its organization is concerned, an organization without any recognition of God or any kind of God or any kind of religion anywhere. And the United Nations is that tonight because it was set up in deference to the communists. Why then does the Pope go? And furthermore, I raise some other questions because I'm going to answer them to you. Why then does the Pope go? I think, in my opinion, there are two reasons why he's going. In the first place, since Pope John the 23rd, there has been a change of attitude on the part of the Roman Catholic popes in relationship to the communists. Pope John and Pope Paul no longer take the same stand that Pius XII took in dealing with the communist world. Pius said there could be no contact, no business, no connection, no dealings with the communists. But these two recent popes have now taken a broader and a softer attitude. And following Pope John's encyclical Pacem in Terris, in which he came out with his broad endorsement of humanism and gave endorsement to socialistic principles, and Roman Catholics were shocked all over this country. Following that, 1 million more votes in Italy went for the Communist Party, and it shook the political leaders throughout the world. And now the Pope is willing to come into an atheistic organization with the communist in great power actually determining the structure of that organization tonight and to go onto that platform. And I am wondering if you thought didn't get the consent and the permission of the communist in order to extend the invitation which he did to the Pope. And if the communist gave their consent for this invitation for the Pope to come to the United Nations, then I can assure you people tonight that the communists intend to get something out of it in their overall program of taking over the world for godless communism. Now, you haven't heard any opinions like this. You haven't heard anybody express any opinions like this. Certainly not in the press, certainly not in the editorials. You've heard nothing of this sort. But we do know that in these last few years, since Pope John especially, that the communists have picked up his encyclical, and even Gus Hall in our own country has written his article claiming that the encyclical can be used to bring about a reconciliation and an understanding between the communist and the Roman Catholic Church. And I stand here tonight as a Protestant minister telling you people that there can be no reconciliation between Christianity and godless communism. It's utterly impossible if Christianity is to be the Christianity that our fathers gave to us. So consequently, you have some sort of a play, some sort of a movement going on here in which the communists are moving in, thinking they're going to be able to use the Roman Catholic Church and possibly the Pope as he comes to New York. And here the Roman Catholic leadership is adjusting itself, and that there is certainly some adjustment taking place here. And we'll be very interested to see exactly how it comes out in the type of message which the Pope delivers to the United Nations. But now let's go one step further. And this is where I bring you now to the very heart of the great issue so far as the Pope is concerned in the Roman Catholic Church. In the United States, we have always stood for separation of church and state. These issues are gradually being whittled down a little here by some court decisions and also by the executive department, but we must adhere to these strict principles of separation of church and state, because when there has been any union, it is the cleric, it is the church that moves up to direct and guide and give admonition to the state. And we have seen it develop in our own country in just these recent years, when the National Council of Churches has gone running down to Washington to put its political pressures on Congress to get the civil rights legislations passed. And that was a Protestant clericalism which I personally resent and which I have spoken out against in this country. It is not the business of the clerics, Roman Catholic or Protestant, to go down to Washington and tell the representatives of the people what they should do. The representatives of the people in Washington should be told by the people what they should do, not by the clerics. And this clear line of demarcation has always been honored in our country, and the Protestants have sought to maintain it. Now, the Pope represents the old world's concept of the union of church and state. The Vatican is a union of church and state. And those of you who know anything about the history of the struggle of the Reformation and the struggle in Europe know that one of the main issues was popery, in which the Pope sought to direct and dictate and control the kings of Europe. That is history just as clear as anything can be. Now the Pope is moving in onto the international stage, and he's coming to a world political assembly at which will be assembled the politicians and the representatives of the nations in their official capacity, and he's going to proceed and presume to lecture them. I was interested in hearing Drew Pearson's program tonight, in which his substitute said that the Vatican was quietly passing the word around among the representatives of the nations that the Pope would be pleased if the heads of state, if as many of the heads of state as possible, would come to the United Nations in order to hear his message to them. So here is the same idea, here's the same old concept that we had in Europe and which brought such havoc and which brought the colonization here in the New World, in which our fathers fled from the persecution that came down upon them because of the union of the state and the church. And everything that the Western world has represented in the United States of America has been against that. We haven't accepted these ideas. And we have been a land not of a state church, but of free churches. And the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And this is a repudiation of the European system where you had the church and the state united, and here was the Roman pontiff seeking to direct the affairs of state. And this mighty issue of separation of church and state is written into the very First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America. Oh my, when I begin to get into these areas of thought and I begin to express my opinions concerning these areas, the Pope now is coming to to be the leader of peace in relationship to the political powers of this earth. And he's coming now to speak to the political powers of this earth and to give them admonition and exhortation as to how they can proceed to obtain peace. It looks as though we're getting ready to turn back the course, the clock of church history, maybe 400 years or more. Well, I was very interested in noticing that in these confessions of our great Protestant churches, I brought with me tonight the 39 articles of the Episcopal Church I've been studying, especially this week because I've been talking about Bishop Pike's repudiation of these things. But you're amazed to see in these 39 articles of the Episcopal Church these references to the Roman Catholic Church. And then I have here our own Confession of Faith, which is the Westminster Confession of Faith of all these Presbyterian and Reformed churches throughout the whole world. And may I read you just a paragraph from our own creed, the standard of our own church. And this is the standard of the church that Dr. Blake is stated clerk up to. They have the same standards. And here's chapter number 23 of the civil magistrate. And here toward the end, as we're speaking about the duties of the people to pray for magistrates, we read here, "Much less hath the Pope any power or jurisdiction over them," that is over the civil magistrates, "in their dominions or over any of their people." That is a part of the Westminster Confession of Faith, that the Pope cannot come in between the people and between the state, and that in his dominions he has no power or jurisdiction in any political affair, and that's in the Westminster Confession of Faith. And you turn back into these great Protestant confessions that we have in this country, you'll be surprised. The references here to all these other ideas, of course, that the Roman Catholic Church has embraced and which the Protestants broke away from. But I was interesting this past week in getting my material for the message I delivered on Friday night at the convocation of Shelton College, in going back into the early history of our own country and seeing how that our colleges, Harvard was the first Christian college and it was private. Princeton was a Presbyterian college. It was privately organized, not financed by the state at all. The same was true of Yale. The same was true of the Newark, Delaware, which was a Presbyterian college, and it became, of course, the University of Delaware. But in regard to Princeton here, we were told that they sent messengers and committees back over to England to raise money and to bring it over to help establish these colleges because the colonies were so poor and they were afflicted by the harassment of the Indians and other troubles that they had. And here's a report of how they were able to get some funds. And they first wanted to name what is now Nassau Hall in Princeton after the governor, who was said here to be a very fine Christian leader. But he modestly declined to have the hall named after him, and he proposed the name Nassau Hall in proof of, quote, "of the honor we retain in this remote part of the globe to the immortal memory of the glorious King William III, who was a branch of the illustrious House of Nassau, and who, under God, was the great deliverer of the British nation from those two monstrous furies, popery and slavery," end of quote. Now imagine Nassau Hall at Princeton. It stands there, of course. I went to Princeton and studied in the seminary there, and we saw that Nassau Hall. Everybody sees the old hall. But it was named in memory on the recommendation of the governor for the illustrious House of Nassau, because of these issues which had been shaped up in England and which had brought about these persecutions that contributed to the immigration that opened the New World. And these people who came and established Princeton College and Princeton Seminary, and these men who came into this New World, were determined that in this world we would not have any connection between the church and between the state, and that we would be free from these harassments from the ecclesiastical powers in our political life as our political life unfolded here in the United States. Isn't it interesting to see that? And now, as I have spent such a large part of my own life here in the state of New Jersey in my ministry, And I've become exceedingly interested in the history of our area, and I've been going back and studying it and seeing how Cape May was settled in there in that great old Presbyterian church there, 250 years of age, and see the tombstones, and then see how the Quakers came in, and then you see the time when the Methodists came in, and you had South Jersey here with the Presbyterians and the Quakers and the Methodists. And it's only been in these recent years that the Roman Catholics have come in. And it's only been in the last 50 years that the Roman Catholics have reached a place of power and dominance here in the state of New Jersey. And I do not hesitate to say to everybody listening to me that it's this liberal, political, Roman Catholic element headed up by Governor Hughes that's responsible for this attack upon Shelton College. I'm convinced of it in my own opinion. And here we represent a Protestantism that stands for these things that we've always stood for in this country. Now I'd like to say one other thing at this particular point, which I'm sure will help. And I'm sure that if I continue to cry out against these persecutions that are coming upon us at the hands of these politically powerful Roman Catholics in the state of New Jersey, that we can help turn this tide. We can help stop this tide. It's not too late in the state of New Jersey. But I do want to make it very clear to all of you people tonight, when I speak like this, I'm speaking for liberty. I'm speaking for separation of church and state. And the other afternoon on Tom Liberty's program, which is on WXUR in that Freedom Speak, somebody called up and said that Dr. McIntyre was anti-Catholic. And then Mr. Livesey said, no, he didn't think that was. And then I understand that Roman Catholic after Roman Catholic called up and said, no, Dr. McIntyre was not anti-Catholic. I am a Protestant. I want to preserve these principles of separation of church and state. And when the Roman Catholic Church moves in any particular to infringe upon these principles, I'm going to speak out against them. But as a Protestant, I give to every Roman Catholic the same liberty, the same heritage that we have in this blessed country, and I want to see it preserved together. But when the Roman Catholic Church moves in with some political persecution, as I feel we have suffered in Shelton College, I'm going to cry out against it. And isn't it interesting now that you can't even talk about the coming of the Pope to this country without somebody saying you're anti-Catholic? That's not honest. That's not right. That's not American. You can't even discuss the coming of the Pope and these issues without somebody saying he's anti-Catholic. No, beloved, I stand here tonight as a Protestant minister who stands in a great succession and a great heritage of liberty, which was born out of afflictions in Europe. And I don't want anything to break down the position of separation of church and state in this country. And furthermore, the coming of the Pope to this new world, where the whole ideas of the union of church and state, which he represents and has represented all these centuries, is something that the Protestants of this country must be fully aware of. And I'm certain that there are thousands of Roman Catholics that are wondering how he could possibly go to the UN with the communist in it. And I'm wondering, truly, that there are thousands of Roman Catholics in this country who do believe in these principles of liberty and separation of church and state, who will be wondering about some of these issues as they are further implemented. Out of this, I can assure you, I believe will now come a move by the president in which he will say, we will establish diplomatic relations with the Vatican. Mark my word. And if he does, I am going to be one of the most vigorous opponents of that move of any of the clergy in the United States of America. We cannot in any way pull down or modify these mighty principles that the church must be free from any entanglements with the state, either way you look at it. Now, the other angle to this, of course, is that Bishop Corson has gotten into the picture. And as he has gotten into it as a leader of the Methodists, 50 million of them, the paper said here, he now sees in this an opportunity to develop the ecumenical move, which is the drive to build the one world church. And he believes now that if all the Protestants can gather in New York and meet the Pope and have a religious summit, that some pronouncement, or the Pope may be able to say something which will make it possible for us to move further along the road of a reunion with the Roman Catholic Church. Now at this point, it must be very clear to everyone that Pope John and also Pope Paul have made it clear that the Roman Catholic Church, in its outreach now to the separated brethren, as they're calling them, the Protestants, they do not intend to sacrifice or to compromise any essential dogma, as they call it. And the compromises, as it has to deal with dogma, which is the authority of the Church, and the great questions of the sacraments and the problems relative to the Virgin Mary, and especially the matter of her assumption into heaven, and all of these things, it will be the Protestants who will have to surrender and make the concessions in order that they may go back under the canopy of the Roman Catholic Church. Now, these adjustments are here in the atmosphere and in the air, and you're going to see the drive toward that stepped up with great momentum as a result of the Pope's visit to the United States. Time magazine this week has quite a story on Paul's journey. What they call it, Paul's journey. And I was sure when he took the name Paul that he did it because Paul has been the representative, more or less, of the Protestants, and that this was a gesture moving toward seeking to get the Protestants to come back into the Roman Catholic Church. But, beloved, did you ever stop to think who it is that's going to go up to New York City to welcome the Pope in this summit meeting? It's going to be this renegade company of Protestants that don't believe in the virgin birth. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if Bishop Pike wasn't up there. He'll be right in the very front row along with Eugene Carson Blake. I wouldn't be at all surprised. And the Pope now, who is on these journeys to bring the Protestant back, he's gotten lined up with the wrong side of the Protestant world. He's gotten lined up with the side that doesn't believe the virgin anymore, the virgin birth, and they don't believe the resurrection, and they don't believe in the ascension, and they don't believe in the return of Christ, and they don't believe in the Bible. And the Pope is joining up with the modernist and renegade Protestants who've gone off in departure of the faith. And they're working with them to bring about this union. It's the most contradictory situation you ever saw. When it comes to the matter of real doctrine and real dogma, I'm much closer to the Pope than Eugene Carson Blake is. But he's working with Blake and I can't work with him. It's a strange contradiction, the way this thing is being twisted around. And if we could ever get on some of these great networks and have an opportunity to express this thing to the American people, the country would see it. The country would recognize what's happening to us. The Pope himself is willing to abandon his dogma to take in these Protestants, but he's taking in a big slice of them through the Episcopal Church and the Presbyterian Church. Because when you have 200 bishops in the Episcopal Church that won't even say anything against Bishop Pike's heresy, they're just ripe for the Pope to gather them up and bring them around. And the Pope is moving into this area now to bring in the liberal Protestant element back into the Roman Catholic Church. And those of us who stand by the faith that believes in the Virgin Mary and delights in the fact that she was pure and that she was the mother of our Lord, and those of us delight in the Bible. During the Reformation, beloved, the issue was not over the Incarnation. The Roman Catholic Church believes in the Incarnation. The fundamentalist believes in the Incarnation. Today the issue is whether you have an incarnate God. And Bishop Pike doesn't believe in the Incarnation, except some Hindu type of Incarnation. Isn't it interesting? But I think it's my duty, as a Protestant minister, to stand in my pulpit in a free country where we have free churches and we have the separation of church and state, and seek to enlighten and inform you people concerning the significance of the coming of the Pope to the United Nations. And it's this kind of enlightenment and this kind of information and this kind of preaching which I believe is preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. There is only one mediator between God and man, and that mediator is Jesus Christ. And you don't have to go through the church to get to Christ. You go to the cross and find the cleansing blood. And then as a new creature, you speak directly to him in the secret of your closet or wherever you may be. I guess maybe I'm off the air now. Sorry. I'd like to get the rest of these things in. But isn't it interesting that the Protestant churches have long since stopped talking about the great issues that gave them birth and gave them liberty and gave them a new world? And I can assure you people right now, as the pastor of this church here in the state of New Jersey, and I've ministered to you, and I look at Princeton, and I remember old Nassau, and then I look at the record here. Then I go to Cape May and walk over to a cemetery that's 250 years of age. I can assure you people that I can hold my head high in this state and breathe the free air of liberty which was given to me by these people who laid these foundations in this state. And now that the Roman Catholic population has come in from Europe and from New York into the Hudson County area, and they've moved down the coast to take over Atlantic City and moved on down the coast to take over some of these other towns, and they've moved into Camden to take over Camden, so that both parties say, well, if you want somebody, you got to elect a Roman Catholic, no matter who it is. And they moved into Trenton, and the Roman Catholics have moved on in until they're getting our judgeships, and they got controls of our papers. And this has all happened even in the lifetime of my ministry in the state of New Jersey, and I've seen it take place. And then here I stand in this pulpit, breathing the free air which is ours. And here we have a state control up here that has a Democrat liberal who's a Roman Catholic. His brother's a priest. And one of the men told me, he says, the present governor of this state will do anything the bishop tells him except perjure himself. And you've got a terrific tie-in with the Roman Catholic Church in this country, in this state politically. And here we come with a little Christian college, and yes, I'm a Protestant, and we stand for separation of church and state. And so what do? We must stop this conservative drive. These men in Cape May, this Christian admiral's growing, and people are coming from everywhere. Somewhere along the line, somebody's got to clip the wings of these fellows, because we don't want this conservative movement to gain too much momentum. And isn't it interesting? Thank God we've got a lot of Roman Catholics that are getting their eyes open, and they're interested in liberty too, and they're moving into the conservative area. And they look around and say, well, Dr. McIntyre isn't intolerant of them. I haven't been intolerant of the Roman Catholics. I haven't tried to drive them out of anything. No, I'm trying to keep them from driving me out. And that's the situation. That's our problem. That's the situation we find ourselves in at the present time here in our own community. And what you people need to do, every last one of you, is to get yourselves born again. Be saved. Forsake this world about you. Come into the house of God. Fill the churches with men and women who know what it is to say, I have everlasting life. And I have the gift of God in my soul because I have been washed in the blood of the Lamb. And then come to understand our present struggles, our history, our heritage, all these glorious things that relate to what the Protestant church has been able to enjoy in this country, separation of church and state. And we will not preserve it unless you people do the preserving. And you people will not do the preserving unless you are informed and enlightened, and see the relevancy of these questions to what's happening to our community. Now, don't anybody go out and say, well, I like Dr. McIntyre, and I bet he made a good political speech. No, I didn't make a political speech tonight. I did nothing of the kind. I do question the Pope's going to the UN and using the UN in his great place of leadership of the nations of the world. I object to that. Let me ask you something else. Now that they've invited the Pope up there to be the spokesman, do you think they'll invite the head of the Buddhist world up? You see, the Secretary General is a Buddhist. Do you think they'll invite the international spokesman for the Hindu world up there to address them next? Are they going to discriminate? Are they going to be fair to all religions in the United Nations? Isn't it interesting? They've never invited a president of the World Catholic Churches to get up there and address them yet. Are they going to get them in next? If they're going to start inviting religious leaders to the United Nations, they better get them all in so they won't discriminate. You think they'll do it? No. Watch and see. It's this Roman Catholic gathering and rising in power, and the Pope is to be the great world leader for peace. And in the name of peace, they're going to build their ecumenical movement. In the name of peace, he's going to rise up above the nations again to speak to them like he did 400 years ago. In the name of peace, we're going to be destroyed. I will have a very interesting time like this. I'm afraid, however, I'll be put off some radio stations in this country. They won't let you talk. You've got to the place where you can't even discuss the Roman Catholic Church anymore. It's a sad thing. But we ought to be able to talk about the Roman Catholics or talk about anybody in this country where there are public issues involved. We should be free to do it. And free to do it on the radio and in the pulpits and in our Sunday school classes. Now I'm so happy that so many of you came tonight. Let us pray. Oh God, our Father, we see what the communists are doing in the United Nations. And oh, we see this religious leader coming up there to speak to them. And Lord, somehow let us find out that the communists gave their consent for the Pope to come. And may we see the communist design and the communist intrigue and the communist program in this world organization, as religion now moves in to soften the people up in their rigid opposition to the communist. God, let our people see these things, and may they see them as from the Lord. For Christ's sake, we pray, Amen.